All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. And I'm happy to say I'm on the line with Eric Margulies. He's in Barcelona, Spain, way on the other side of the water from where I'm at. Even if you take the short way, you know, down to the Gulf Coast and over. Still, it's almost as far west as you can get in Europe, you know? Anyway, you know, Eric, he wrote War at the Top of the World and American Raj, Liberation or Domination, and he's been a newspaper reporter and columnist all over the world for decades and decades, including at Dawn. I didn't know that until just now. Dawn.com is a major paper in Pakistan, and some of its reporting will be at issue in this interview, so I was interested to know that. Welcome to the show, Eric. How are you?
Well, it's always a delight to be back with you, and buenos dias.
It's really a miracle of fiber optics that the delay is so short on this line. I dig it.
It is.
All right, so seems to me the biggest news here at Dawn.com today, for starters, is intense U.S. monitoring of Pakistan's nuclear and missile programs. Dozens of cables are seen inquiring into purchases by Pakistan's nuclear and missile complexes on the international market. Now, I guess everybody knows that the CIA was hip to what A.Q. Khan was up to way back since the 70s, that Ronald Reagan and George H.W. Bush both looked the other way and pretended to not know the Pakistanis were making nuclear weapons back in the 80s because they needed their help in Afghanistan against the Russians and all that. Am I right?
That's absolutely true.
And I think you've told me on this show for years that the CIA and the ISI have pretty close contact, and I forget exactly, I guess. Now, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe you could describe the degree of cooperation between them. In it's their deliberate policy to keep the pieces all separate so that nobody can seize them, that they can only be used in a very top-down, deliberate fashion by the state there, right?
Well, that's right. ISI and the CIA have cooperated closely since really the 1960s, but in recent years they mistrust each other greatly, and it's a marriage of convenience rather than love. And both are extremely wary of each other, and the Pakistanis are very, very worried that the next thing the U.S. is going to do is move against Pakistan's nuclear arsenal.
Well, I mean, how crazy is that? I mean, I know that there are some people in D.C. Robert Kagan, you can't discount whatever the Kagans think, somehow happens sometimes, you know? A lot of times, maybe. But is there anybody in the Pentagon who's really smoking that much crack that they think they're going to try that, or what?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. My sources.
You're supposed to say no, fact, no, not in a million years, Scott. Rest assured.
I wish I could, but, you know, with the Osama bin Laden killing, the U.S. is on a roll in Pakistan. It feels it can do anything it wants. And this has long been discussed. I think the first warning sign was that Israel's hardline, very far-right foreign minister, Lieberman, not to be confused with U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman.
Oh, no, they're totally different.
Though they certainly sound like Cheech and Chong together. Lieberman went and said in the United States, he issued a warning that Pakistan is now considered a major threat to Israel, and this because it has nuclear weapons, and this put out the alarm to the neocon network, hence your friend Mr. Kagan, and hence the growing pressure by the neocon forces and the far right in the U.S. That something has to be done with Pakistan's nukes because Muslims can't be trusted with nuclear weapons. And this is a good time for the U.S. to go and expunge them.
All right. Well, so am I just a doomsayer if I say that, if I think that that means that some of those nukes will go off in the failed attempt? I mean, come on.
I don't think so. As far as I know, and I've followed this issue for a long time, Pakistan's nuclear weapons are spread in probably over six or eight different sites that are very heavily guarded by the ISI intelligence service, and they're kept in components. They're not generally assembled except for a few bombs which are kept ready to go with Pakistan's strike air force on two or three different air bases. And there are security links on these bombs, actually supplied by the United States, called permissive security links, that would prevent any people who really didn't know what they were doing in to be able to put them together and to fuse them and use them.
So then the operation would be to send in, you know, SEAL Team 6 through 160 to seize all these different components and pull it off then? Or how would that work?
That's right. The scenario would go, the U.S. has announced the terrorists are as reliable information that terrorists are about to seize Pakistan's nuclear weapons, and it has to intervene to prevent this from happening, to protect the USA. The SEALs and all this armada of special operations, Rambo forces that we've developed, would then go in. Now, the Pakistanis are really, really concerned that this is going to happen. And when the U.S., killed bin Laden, assassinated him, there was a hue and cry in Pakistan because saying, well, listen, if U.S. helicopters could evade our air defenses and come in, then surely they can do it against our nuclear sites too, which are now extremely, screamingly vulnerable.
Well, and hey, some militia guys seized a military base all day the other day, held off the whole army or something.
That's right. That was really embarrassing. It's curious. That was a naval air base near Karachi on the coast, and they blew up two Orion anti-submarine aircraft to about $40 million each that had been supplied by the U.S. That's an odd target. They were protesting the Pakistani strikes against tribal militants in the north, but it would seem to make more sense for them to attack U.S.-run air bases in Afghanistan and in Pakistan than the Pakistani governments. Maybe it was to humiliate the Pakistani armed forces. They certainly did, and it makes Pakistan look both incompetent and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, part of the case DiLapiro makes in his article on antiwar.com today, it's on Tom Dispatch as well, is that, hey, don't forget, our supply lines run through Pakistan. And they can, all they really have to do, I guess, is just stopping militia guys from blowing up the supply routes through the Khyber Pass.
That's quite right. The two main supply routes, it all comes up from Karachi port, and it goes up through Khyber, through Quetta, further to the west. And the U.S. and its dragooned allies in Afghanistan are almost 90 or 80% dependent on these trucked-in supplies of water and food and ammo. Some of it's flown in, but a lot of it comes in by ground convoys. They have been attacked. They've been attacked around Khyber. But the Pakistanis have been letting them through. They could choke them off anytime they wanted. Curiously, the Russians have been allowing some shipments of supplies for the U.S. and NATO to come in from Russia all the way down through Central Asia and Uzbekistan into Afghanistan as well. But the main thought is Pakistan could choke it off, but if they do, the U.S. would take it as a hostile act, and you can bet there would be no more flow of American millions and tens of millions of billions of dollars to the Pakistani leadership.
Well, I guess I was thinking of it the other way around. Like, they have the ability to retaliate against us pretty bad.
Well, there are plenty of people in Pakistan, if you read the Pakistani press, are calling for just that. They're saying, wait a minute, you know, Pakistan should retaliate against the U.S. for a violation of its sovereignty by killing bin Laden, by cutting off some of these supplies, at least temporarily, shooting down some of these American drones that are killing Pakistani civilians.
We'll have to hold it right there, Eric, as we go out to this break. We'll be right back, everybody, with Eric Margulies and try to pick it up right where we left off. It's Anti-War Radio. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. We're on the line with Eric Margulies. talking about the threat of an American attempt to seize Pakistan's nuclear weapons components, such as they are. I guess I'm going to fail to live up to my "we'll pick it up where we left off." So I don't remember exactly where it was. Eric, do you?
We were talking about pinching off convoys and attacking and shooting down some of the drones are killing Pakistani civilians. I lost the rest of it.
Yeah. Well, that's right where we were. I was going to joke in there somewhere that at the end of the Bush years, some of the State Department people were actually using supply routes through Iran as a basis for negotiations with them before, I guess, the Israel lobby stopped them or something. They were thinking, you know, the Pakistanis really got us on this. Maybe we should make a deal with the Iranians so that we can transport our war supplies through there. Just another way, I guess, the Iranians could be our allies this whole time if it wasn't for Israel.
That's right, and that's why the stated cost, according to the Congressional Budget Office, of the of this 10-year war in Afghanistan has been $450 billion. It's probably a lot more, but even that's a huge amount of money. So, and one of the reasons is that it's so expensive to wage war. It costs $1 million a year to keep one American soldier in Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, and so here's the thing, too. Maybe you can help parse this for me. I still don't understand it, and I bet a lot of the audience is pretty confused about it, too. When you have pretty much everybody playing all these different sides in this war here, and particularly you have more and more information, it seems, coming out saying that at least factions inside the Pakistani government are backing the Haqqani network. Seems like somebody or other in the ISI or the military or somebody must have known that Osama was there. Not necessarily the whole state as policy, but something was going on there. But then I also kind of doubt that there weren't factions who were in on the raid to get him too. You know, the other guys who weren't in on keeping him and whatever. Seems like kind of a big mess where we're paying them and they're backing our enemies in Afghanistan while at the same time they're waging a civil war in their own tribal areas on our behalf because supposedly Osama's up there somewhere. It's a big mess, Eric. Help me understand.
Well, it's a very complex part of the world. There are many different interests at work there. One of the biggest is that this war in Afghanistan is hated by the Pakistani public. Over 90% are against it. But for Pakistan's elites and its military leadership and its politicians, it's been the goose that laid the golden egg. Pakistan has so far gotten about $3 billion a year from the United States. God knows how much in secret CI payoffs, what they call black money. So the cash is just rolling in Pakistan, a very poor, nearly bankrupt country. So it's in Pakistan's interest, or at least of the Pakistani elite, to keep this conflict going. Why would they want to stop it? Suddenly Uncle Sam isn't going to pay them anymore. So self-serving, yes. But the underlying all of this, Scott, is the point that Pakistan's interests and those of the United States and Afghanistan are diametrically opposed, and the U.S. has forced Pakistan with a gun in its head to obey American demands to pursue this war and attack its own tribal people when Pakistan hates it. But it has to do it out for – it's, you know, the old mafia thing, lead or gold. Take your choice. Well, Pakistan's being told America's going to go to war with you unless you agree, and here's some cash for your efforts.
Well, also underlying all this is the fact that Hamid Karzai and that kind of quisling government created by the U.S. and NATO there in Kabul can't ever be the national government of Afghanistan no matter what anyway, right?
That's correct. It's most unlikely. He has no respect. He's only kept in power on the bayonets of Western troops.
So the whole thing's going nowhere.
Well, I don't know what at this point would replace Karzai in Afghanistan. If Afghanistan were left alone by the United States and pulled its troops out and its other imperial troops from NATO, who would run Afghanistan as a unified nation? I really don't know. Maybe too broken to cobble together a government. Actually, Karzai, ironically, might be a good person to do it as a figurehead. because he has no power. But he's a Pashtun, and the Pashtun people make up 60% of Afghanistan's population. And so a powerful Pashtun has to be in power in Kabul to really make sure there's a viable government. But it's a mess, and so far there's no hope of any kind of real government there.
Well, and it doesn't seem like the people, the Pashtuns of Afghanistan, are willing to settle for Karzai, no matter who his grandpa is.
No, they have no respect for him. He was a CIA asset. He was brought off the CIA's library shelf and put in. One of my old friend there was killed. One of the Mujahideen leaders, they were going to put him in, and they instead put in Haqqani. But the CIA has a whole library full of these exile leaders. Look at Libya. Suddenly all these so-called Libyan patriots and democratic patriots suddenly materialize from somewhere suburban Virginia, and they're parachuted into Benghazi, and they're America's boys there. You know, the Roman Empire did the same thing. It kept all kinds of little kings and princes in Rome to use them whenever it needed them to insert.
All right, well, now, so real quickly now, back to any attempt to actually seize the nuclear weapons. I mean, that would mean outright war, right? They would call all of their troops out of their barracks to try to repel that attack, and then it would be on, and what could be worse than that? And I know I'm Mr. Hyperbole over here, so calm me down then.
Well, it's very likely trying to seize the weapons would result in some Americans being killed, helicopters being downed. It wouldn't go smoothly, and it would be a brief war between the Pakistanis and Americans, but then the Americans would give them a few billion dollars more and shut them up. And the Quisling government in Pakistan is just as much on its knees as it is as the one in Kabul. And don't forget, behind it are the Indians, because the Americans think that the Pakistanis, you cooperate with us, you do what we say, or we're going to give those Indians the green light to come and clean your clock.
Yeah, but we're messing around with atomic war here. You're supposed to not... You can mess around like this between Bumblestan and something else, but not between nuclear powers.
Well, that's right. But Pakistan doesn't have the capability of hitting any important American target with nuclear weapons. Maybe Iraq, maybe some American bases in Afghanistan. But by and large, America really doesn't have to worry about that too much, though it would be, of course, catastrophic if there were any kind of nuclear exchange. I wrote that about that in my first book.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, it seems like the worst-case scenario would be that it would lead to war between India and Pakistan, that the Indians would think it was their chance to take advantage in it. And
That's right.
Failure, you know, the Iran hostage rescue style raids would fail to do the job, and you'd have, you know, I don't know. I got quite an imagination, though. I don't know. Well, thanks very much, Eric. Sorry we got to go, but I appreciate you joining us on the show again.
Been a pleasure, Scott. Cheerio. Bye-bye.
That's Eric Margulies. EricMargulies.com. LouRockwell.com.